Welcome to Original Lines, the podcast where we talk with original people with original ideas about the creative life. Today we'll be talking to Isabel Davis. Isabel is a visual artist working in Seattle, Washington. She works in several mediums, including encaustic, cyanotype, and installation. Hi, Isabel, and welcome.
Hi, Laura. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you. To get started, let's talk about when you started making art. Have you always made art of some kind, or did you have you started and stopped again? How has that worked for you?
Well, as a child, as all children do, we draw, and that led to narrative work. And I think most of my childhood years, the creative expression was writing, illustrated writing often. So I used to make storybooks, and I made up characters and loved to elaborate on their strangeness. I had a grandmother who taught creative writing, so it was a little tyke. We used to go and write poetry, and my mom was a writer for Sunset Magazine, and there was always typewriters going in my house, and I think the literary was pretty profound. But an interesting thing is my father being an architect, my mom was a landscape designer, and they were always working with visual information in the environment. When I was younger, just the adventures with and the beauty and the experience of it visually that way. But then the writing kind of took hold. In college, I was had to declare a major, and I felt that somehow writing was something very private. I didn't want to declare myself a writer. Everybody and their brother wanted to be a writer. I wasn't going to be a writer. And I explored art, and then it clicked with me because I recognized it was an even more creative form for expressing ideas. And I could jump very easily. I mean, I love metaphor. I love the writing process and the paradox of language and the limitations and how to expand it and all of that. But I really, really liked the visual language. It proved to be more interesting and more challenging. I lived in New York for a time, and that was in the 80s, was a fantastic time to be in New York City, just foundational. I really got interested in artists that were talking about appropriation of social issues and subject matter and reflecting it back at you. And people like women like Jenny Holzer and Barbara Kruger and a number of artists, the Guerrilla Girls who were working on the city streets. Plus the installation art was so fabulous then, and the earth art was happening. And that was such an exciting input in the process of becoming an artist and coming of age kind of time period for me. While I was still working on two-dimensional art primarily and film and video at the time, the idea of collage, pulling in and collaging a lot of my interests really came to life. And for a period, I thought maybe I would study art history. And had this great opportunity where I was working on a ship as a cook, so I had 2 weeks on this ship and 2 weeks in New York City without money, without needing to go to a job, so I could really pound the pavement and study art and make art, and that was a pretty nice time. Then I did raise children, and my marriage took over my art making for a while and economic needs at various times. But I always found a way for it to come out. And when I was working as a cook professionally, that became my art. When I was my husband at the time for a couple decades as a professional cellist. So I got involved and engaged in his career and creating musical programs. And we started a chamber music series that I participated in, was a creative advisor and created content and just ideas for concerts and themes. And it was really engaging, but it never quite felt like my project. But it was a great venue for developing. And I worked on some children's illustrated books at the time, and that kept a sense of my own vocabulary going.
there we are. Then that's kind of led us up to present day. And so I kind of want to ask you kind of a slightly esoteric question. Do you consider your art to be a practice? Is it something that, like, in the sense that yoga is a practice or meditation is a practice?
Practice is a good word. I call it a practice all the time. So you're making me think about it a little more. kind of an interesting thing is, does the art need to be there for the practice to be there? And I think one can meditate, one could cook, one could do a lot of different things. And it would still kind of be the practice, the personal practice. But the community engagement or the voice that eventually gets delivered is not there with a lot of the other forms of practice. So I think it's a practice, but I think there's a lot more to it.
Okay, good. So do you think that the...
I mean, a lot more to calling, you know, a person an artist. There's more than just the practice part. It's also the inclusion of the whole expression and community deliverance. And
so there are multiple points of contact. There's not only the contact, the art with you, but then the contact of your art then with the community, and then the contact of you with the community. So in that way, is that how we're... Is it different? Is it different for you personally? Like the art making process itself, does it do something different for you than it actually does for the community? Or do you think that's an artificial separation?
It's really easy for us. I'm somewhat cerebral. Mm-hmm. And it's easy for me to say something is experienced and that's enough. And sometimes it is enough, but I feel like there's a kind of an obligation to, producing it and witnessing it and creating it for a community. Because I was thinking about how ideas often are, you know, it's kind of like a giant mushroom that under the ground exists as a whole. And when I grew, I got a mushroom log one time and tented it and grew it. And I cut some of the mushrooms a little early. They didn't have individual stems yet. They were all kind of one mass. And I had never known that about mushrooms. I thought that was pretty interesting. Well, I think there's a collective consciousness in a way that connects us all. And probably everybody has experienced that where they have an idea and they think it's their own and they think it's an innovative and cutting edge, and come to find out that it pops up all over the place. And you go, hey, how come they're doing a show with that topic? Or why is that artist doing that? That was my idea, you know. I don't know that we can always entirely own an idea. I think we are part of the whole that way. I think sometimes just by the process of conceiving, thinking, caring, turning things over, you know, reflecting, meditating, praying, all those things that we do is contributing in a substantial way to the collective consciousness. But yet the world can still spin around in other directions. And I think it's kind of like if you have a map with all kinds of locations all over it, but until you put a pin in, you're not like identifying something specifically for visual reference. It can slip away. You know, it's just the map. It's not a place, you know? So I think to have a place on the map sometimes, or make a statement, having that artwork delivered is an important part of it. I often really want to move away from the city and want to go live somewhere where I can just make lots of art. And I'm wondering whether it would be kind of like pulling that mushroom out from the mushroom log prematurely, if I would wither, because a lot of the artwork really, to me, the purpose, the exchange, the response to things going on, you know, kind of requires that environment.
My favorite metaphor for the art world is an ecosystem too, because it takes all of the input and you never really know. It's almost like a compost pile. You never know. You put the stuff in and you almost don't know what's going to come out. You never really know. You make, as a personal, you know, on a personal level, you make and you make and you make, and you never know 4 years down the road what that thing you made 4 years ago is going to morph into, what it's going to turn into, if it's going to be reused in something or but anyway, so I love your map metaphor too, but the ecosystem one and the mushroom log, that's all I like that. Which actually kind of leads me to our next question is, in your art, you often integrate some of your social concerns, particularly like healthy food practices and environmental issues. Do you make a deliberate choice to do this, or is it almost more of a natural outgrowth of what you're personally interested in? Or is that an artificial distinction?
I think the art is a natural outgrowth in a lot of ways. It's just kind of like a response to things I'm thinking anyway. My process is kind of unusual, I think. The intellectual side, sort of like needing, I get excited about the ideas and the art statement and the purpose. And then really what informs me is the emotional and the intuitive and the playfulness and other things that I think might be distracting me, but then at the end, they all kind of come back and weave in to the art statement. And I'm often surprised that it fits that form, but I'm not sure what comes first or what is the most important aspect of that. You know, I think if it's art statement own, alone, for me, it would be kind of lifeless. But when it comes from things from my experience, I think it comes down to kind of like this desire for truth and desire for like something to be true as it could be to me. You know, while I do think of truth kind of like a mathematical formula, that there is truth that way, but I don't think relative truth is ever absolute. I think it changes form as we become more aware and as we grow and learn and that sort of thing. So things I become more aware of kind of feed into what I'm doing and then they spit out. And I think the artwork can become very socially engaged and purposeful when I feel there's a purpose and a need for that voice. Because I've been a cook and I've fed a family for years and raised a couple of daughters, and food has a lot of meaning for me in terms of more than just nourishment, but also the exchange and the living in Europe for a time appreciated the value they placed on the dinner plate and the quality of ingredients and being a cook and how much you can explore flavors and variety. I mean, it's just just kind of like a wonderful, like, on the moment, spontaneous opportunity to celebrate what the earth has created and to feed each other. I like the this cooking project that came with a group of chefs in San Francisco, and they put on this amazing dinner, and I'd love to do something like this. But an artist created unusual food implementations, food like forks and knives and spoons and plates. He created, you know, spoons that were super long and had spoons on two ends, or they were a funny shape. And the only way you could eat it would be to feed the other person. Or there might be something that's like just a different way to get the food in your mouth and challenging. And so I think people paid lots of money for these top chefs and a 5-course meal, and they had to figure out how to engage every time a course came to enjoy it. And it became much more of a communal experience. And I love how that focused on that idea of communal experience with food, not just consumption of it. Mm-hmm. And then there's also so much control that our food experiences have had by packaged processed foods and time, this idea of time that we have to eat on the go, you know, we have to eat in our cars between events, et cetera. And the slow food movement, of course, has contributed to rethinking that and local, eating locally and celebrating local farms. We have a wonderful experience here in the Northwest, but it's not like this all over the country. So That is something that really came to mind is, you know, considering everything that we eat is political.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where does this come from? How is this grown? Right. And how does this impact other people? Do, you know, GMO production of certain kinds of products affect the neighbor's products when the GMO seeds blow over and it might ruin a strain of heritage variety?
Mm-hmm.
People in subsistence farmers, with climate change happening and strange weather events happening, it might be the difference between whether they can survive or not, or eat if a weather event causes a crop failure. I mean, there's just so many things that affect circumstances beyond our little circles in America that we need to be mindful of. And I think people are so much more expanded in their thought about these things.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That reminds me of your the Mandala project that you did with the Rainier Food Bank, correct? I was going to ask you about that. And in terms of its connection with healthy food practices and healthy food production practices, but also in connection with some of your own inclinations in your art. You seem to really like conceptual art, and like you said, you're very cerebral. You approach things. There's been several things that you've done that are more conceptual or installation work. Why do you tend to lean towards this in your work, that you like this so much? Does it offer you a spontaneity or a flexibility or something that you like, or is it something else?
I think the intellectual side of it is like a touchstone for me. It reduces a sense of chaos. And I think when you're a creative person and you love creativity and innovation, mm-hmm. I'm always wanting to recreate at any moment. I'll create a plan one day and the next day, okay, I'm excited to recreate a new plan and forget the old one. And, you know, instead of like, it's hard to program manage myself with the creativity, with that bug. So I think that's what the intellectual side, besides I just sort of love expansive ideas, and it helps me feel like something can be all that it needs to be. It's just, it's not the most important thing about the art piece, but it's a structure. It's sort of a guide that helps me keep within a boundary and sort of keep on track. But a loose guide, because I think what has to happen is for the real-time thing to happen, which has to do with reactions, responses, emotions, people's experiences. It can't be just the intellectual to me.
Mm. Back to the map, it seems like the value sometimes of the conceptual in this is just in the, you're adding in this ideation process to the mix, right? I mean, this is sometimes when conceptual art stuff that is only going to be experienced once. Not only does this cause an experience, but it also adds this new idea or this new concept or this new way of looking at things to the ecosystem.
Well, I think also I'm very interested in the relational aesthetics and the experience, interactive experience of people with art. Not to be didactic, not to just say these are my ideas and everybody has to learn them to disseminate them, but more, but what they can give to it and what the project becomes when they participate. So with the Mandala project you mentioned, that was really interesting because, you know, yes, it was made with grains and rice, which is kind of subsistence level food source throughout the world. Mm-hmm. You know, 50% of the most common meal is rice, for instance. So it's basics. But then there's color and there was a design and then this sort of meditative approach that people would come and just have fun filling in these lines, just like it was a coloring book almost, with different colored lentils to make the pattern realized. And we had children that would sit and do it for some periods of time. And we had a woman came in her yoga pants and she just kept coming back and just seemed to really enjoy this sort of meditative approach. We had all kinds of people, including a policeman, come and sit down. And I love that aspect of just, you know, nobody there was self-selected in their interest in art. They were just happened upon this and were drawn to it and participated in it. Mm-hmm. And how many people thought about this as being a, you know, subsistence level food source? Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it was because it was sponsored by the Rainier Valley Food Bank and it was about food and the subject was food. I think there was some sort of obvious level of connection to that idea.
Well, everybody gravitates to the kitchen, right? That's where everybody goes. If you're in, right. If you're in a place, a house, you always end up in the kitchen because it's, yeah. Okay. Well, I you may have already answered my tough question. I have a tough question, but it's how do you feel that art making or just creativity in general, how does it, I'm going to ask you two questions. How does it add to the world and the community? Which, again, I think we've already talked about. But you can elaborate if you like. And then the second part of the question, I'd like to know, how do you feel like creativity, how does it add to your life?
Yeah, we did kind of talk about the first one. I think when I was saying that there's sort of a responsibility to go beyond just the meditative process part of doing art, but actually representing it in the community. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be a burden. It's a privileged opportunity, because I think often we would want that to happen more than it can. Mm-hmm. Because opportunities are sometimes difficult to arrange and find and mm-hmm. be discovered, et cetera. But I specifically, I did make an effort to apply and was accepted in the training for public art for the city of Seattle, which has this wonderful 1% of the art of public buildings. And then they have sponsor a number of projects to bring art into the community. So there are several venues where they present public art and calls for public art. And having had the privilege of this training, gives me a lot more of an idea of what it would take to execute something if I had to work with a fabricator, translate my ideas into some other medium that could withstand the time period that it needs to be there, and also how it could interface with the community. And I really enjoyed thinking about that. And just yesterday, found out that I received a letter yesterday from the Office of Art and Culture that I was accepted as one of the artists on the art roster, which means that for 3 years we'll be in some sort of a website or notebook or something that art projects under the category of the 1% for the arts don't have a long enough time to put out a call for artists will be matched with artists in that list if they seem like they have the right characteristics for the project.
Congratulations.
So there's no guarantee of work, but it's a real privilege to be on that list. And I've worked hard at getting to that position. So I think that's kind of, you know, one of my visions is, you know, to engage in that way. And that's a way to further present my work in a way that feels purposeful. Mm-hmm. But there's a love in my heart for the direct painting. It's really just like such a reflection of soul. It's like writing a precious poem sometimes is just straight out of your heart. Mm-hmm. And paintings can be a battle, or they can be a design challenge. They can include so much. But ultimately, it's just a piece that represents that interpersonal journey, mm-hmm. that process. And I really am led to narrative as much as I love installation and film and everything. I think I'll always preserve a specialness for that kind of work. And I hope I have time in my life to do everything. I really do. So I'll keep revisiting that aspect as well.
Great. Well, then let's move on and talk about a current project that you have. What do you have going now?
I am working on another project. The mandala project we did last year was a big success at the Rainier BAAM Fest, BAM Fest. It's the Rainier Beach Art and Music Festival. It's coming up in a couple of weeks. And they wanted something for that, but I think we're going to do it on a larger scale. And I'm working on a labyrinth design that might incorporate some mandalas. And then I have a opportunity here at Inscape. There's a gallery here that I'll be installing in August and September, early September, with a few events that are going to happen, and those will be announced soon. Working on dates and finalizing what that's going to be, but there's going to be some interactive, experiential thing related to some of my work with food and art, and then I have a projector. I'm going to be showing some work through video, but I'm really excited about the opportunity. So the ideas are flying and coming together, and just need to finalize a few things before I announce exactly what it's going to be. But I'll announce it on my website, so be seeing that shortly.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Okay. Well, Isabel, thank you very much for being with us today.
It was so fun, Laura. Thank you.
I'm glad. Yeah, this has been a really good conversation.
Great.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's episode of Original Lines. I'm your host, Laura Allen, and I'd like to thank Isabel Davis once again for talking with us. You can find out more about Isabel at www.isabeldavisart.com or follow her on Instagram at OysterPearlSal. This has been a production of Two Ponies Press. Visit us online at www.twoponiespress.com and make sure to like and subscribe. Thanks.